Betty Yee joins us now. Betty, welcome.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be with you.
A lot of people here in the Central Valley are familiar with your opponent, but maybe don't know as much about you or your personal story and background. How do you think your background shaped you into the person you are today and the path you've taken into public service?
Sure. Well, I am very proud of my background. I am the second oldest of six children born to immigrant parents, and my really foray into politics was serving as a spokesperson for my parents who didn't speak English as they ran a laundry and dry cleaning business in San Francisco. So their best employees were the six children, and I was responsible for all of the financial transactions of the business between the business and vendors and banks and government. And this really was what got me interested in politics, was just being a voice for someone. And obviously, my finance experience became more and more honed through my formal training. I am a Cal Berkeley grad. I have my master's in public administration, native of San Francisco. And I'm serving in the public and doing public service because I'm just very, very grateful for all the wonderful opportunities I've had as a native Californian, and wish that for every Californian who wants to work hard and succeed.
I've heard you described as a policy wonk, and I think it's been used in a positive way. How do you respond to that? Do you view yourself as a policy wonk?
I do. At the end of the day, I think what the public really wants from their government is for things to work. And one of the things I do take great pride in is, even though I am a finance expert, at the end, what I really like to do is to apply the finance discipline to things that help government programs work and deliver for the public. And it's always been my eye on what the goal is in terms of the role of government, and that's to facilitate things for the residents of the state. And hopefully we can continue to do that.
And, of course, you served in the administration of Governor Gray Davis and now on the Board of Equalization. Moving on to the controller's race now, there is no incumbent in this race, but for 8 years now, John Chung has held this office. You've had an interesting perspective as a member of the Board of Equalization and working with him and his office. I'd be curious to hear your critique of his performance on the job. What do you think he's done well? What do you think are issues that the controller's office could do a better job on if you were in that chair?
Sure. I think he's done a good job with respect to really elevating the transparency of the office. And by that, I mean trying to inform the public on a regular basis about our revenue situation and whether our receipts are keeping track with projections. And also looking at making very, very public on a database the public salaries that are being drawn by workers at the local level as well as the state level. And these are all positions that are funded by taxpayer dollars. And so from the perspective of transparency, very, very high marks, and I want to continue with those legacies. On the other hand, I think, and this is not unique to the controller's office, but I think for state agencies generally, we don't and have not been able to incorporate the use of technology in a robust way that really increases our efficiency. And this is an area that I really want to focus some attention to, because I do believe that certainly operating mining the store, if you will, for the state of California requires having all of the best tools to help us do a good job.
The Office of State Controller isn't the highest profile one in Sacramento, but it's an important office, and it's a multifaceted one. You would sit on a number of different boards. I want to talk about a few of those today as we talk about your agenda for the Office of State Controller. One of those responsibilities is sitting on the boards of retirement systems, CalPERS and CalSTRS.
Yes.
How satisfied are you with the health of CalPERS right now and the future of defined benefit pension programs? Not just for those already in them, but for the future moving forward?
Well, I think to the extent that the investments of the pension funds are very closely tied to the performance of the market, there's always risk and volatility. And what I would do as a member of the CalPERS board is to ensure that we can minimize that as much as possible, taking a very active stance with respect to how we allocate our assets, trying to reduce investment costs, but also looking at how we're going to draw down that unfunded liability, which is sitting at over $100 billion right now. And I want to applaud the governor and the legislature for taking that on with respect to the state teachers' retirement system by enacting a revised funding formula that has the state and school districts and the teacher members all paying more into the system to fully satisfy the unfunded liability over a three-decade period. And so we have to have this long-term vision about how we work down the liability in order to be able to pay all the benefits that our workers have earned. On the other hand, we can do much more in terms of reducing costs and being sure that we are making good investments.
Earlier this year, the CalPERS board drew some criticism from certain quarters in the media and others in public service for their decision to approve 99 special pay exemptions for employees that could result in them obtaining higher pensions, things like the parking citation premium for employees assigned to read parking meters and write tickets. And these are things that are at the local level that local governments have agreed as increases in base pay, but that can be used to obtain a higher pension. That took a good bit of criticism from some out there who follow Sacramento. Would you have voted to approve those exemptions?
First of all, let me just say the role of the board is to essentially implement legislation. And going back and having read the statutes that facilitated these various types of pay, the decision of the CalPERS board was a right decision, and I would have voted for it because that our role at that point is to implement the law by putting together the rules for that. Where the stopgap is really at the collective bargaining table, and to the extent that local governments are offering what we call pensionable compensation in these different ways, this is all part of negotiations that could take place at the bargaining table in terms of which of these types of compensation would be subject to service credits through the pension system. So two steps to this process, but I view the CalPERS board decision as one where they were taking on the role of essentially putting the rules in place to implement the legislation.
You mentioned the collective bargaining process. Your opponent has somewhat of a contentious up and down relationship with organized labor. Many labor organizations are supporting your campaign. How would you characterize your relationship with organized labor?
Well, I would say I have an open relationship. I've not always been on their side, but certainly it's been a cooperative relationship. And I will say that over the time that the state was undergoing severe budget reductions, with the Great Recession, we did have our bargaining units at the Board of Equalization go to the bargaining table, and they really did not want to see their members being laid off and furloughed. And so we encouraged them to go to the table if they could make concessions to do so. And in fact, they did, and they led the rest of the bargaining units of the state in essentially taking a pay cut, contributing more to their retirement, and this was a way that we were able to at least stave off layoffs and furloughs. And for our agency, that was important because we generate revenue for the state of California. And so we've had an open relationship, and certainly when we look at things like becoming more efficient that may create a threat for public employees, we're very, very open in terms of our communication about what it is we're trying to achieve. And more times than not, they're part of the solution, and they are helping us identify efficiencies.
One of the other things that you've talked about a good bit during the campaign is the environment, climate change, and those things. One of the lesser known elements of the state controller's office is you would sit on the board of the State Lands Commission. What do you think the controller could do or should do when it comes to issues like climate change, like fracking? You've talked about that. Where do you see your role there being, in addition to the legislature, in addition to Dogger and those other agencies that are out there doing things in that area?
Sure, sure. Well, to the extent that we have the stewardship responsibility over state lands and our waterways and natural resources on the Lands Commission, it seems to me that we should be modeling at the state level what it means to be responsible environmental stewards. So in other words, if we're going to be mandating businesses and individuals in California to be good environmental stewards, whether it's about water conservation and reuse, whether it's about waste reduction, whether it's about energy efficiency, the state really ought to be modeling what that looks like so that it becomes an ethic for how we live rather than a burden. And this is really where I think we have a tremendous opportunity to start a long-term conversation about how we create the jobs to facilitate that, that the jobs that will produce the technologies, the services, the products that will facilitate us being, facilitate our being good environmental stewards really can be established here in California. We've got the innovation. We certainly can start teaching our young people about being prepared for these jobs. And so I look at it as a very, very long-term effort about how we promote environmental stewardship as a state and also down to the individual level.
One of the other things that has been a big story in California over the last 2 years is Proposition 30. It's been credited with helping to restore the state's fiscal health after voters approved the temporary sales and income tax increase back in 2012. The new Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon has said he is open to extending Proposition 30. Would you support extending those temporary tax increases into the future beyond what voters had approved in 2012?
Well, I think an assessment will have to be made in this next term about whether the economy has recovered enough to generate the revenues that these temporary tax increases did produce. And I think the governor and the legislature will be making that assessment. And should they decide to extend these temporary tax increases, my hope would be that we can have a very open, honest discussion about tax reform. That I don't think the best way to provide for budget stability going forward is extending those temporary tax increases. In fact, I think we ought to be looking at the underlying structure of our tax system because it is not sustainable when we have a shrinking base that's paying the sales tax. And we also have a very, very small base that's responsible for paying the overwhelming majority of our income taxes. And so I don't see how that's sustainable, and I do hope that the decision point about extending the Proposition 30 tax increases will provide an opportunity to talk about tax reform.
Does that mean Prop 13 is on the table in your view?
Well, potentially. I mean, it depends on how open we are with how wide open we crack open the tax system. And if it's a complete comprehensive tax reform discussion, Prop 13 could be on the table.
Again, if you just joined us today, we're talking with Betty Yee. She is a candidate for the Office of State Comptroller, facing off against Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen in the November 4th general election. Of course, this is a campaign, and in campaigns, candidates like to make claims about their opponents. Your opponent has a website that attacks your record serving in the Davis administration back in the late 90s and early 2000s, saying that you're at least partly responsible for the huge growth in general fund spending that the state saw in those years, and also the huge drop in revenue that the state experienced around the time that the dot-com bubble burst. You've also made similar attacks against Mayor Swearingen for her performance with the city of Fresno, saying that she failed to live up to her promises of making the city a better place to live, and blamed her for soaring deficits and unbalanced budgets, which she says she inherited a bad situation when she took office in 2009. Aren't both of those claims a little bit, I guess, silly might not be the best word, but I understand you're in a campaign and both of you are trying to get traction. But there seems like from an outside perspective, there's a lot of macro issues going on in both of your cases.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's true. However, what I would say sets the two sets of arguments apart is the mayor has been has been leading the city. And in her own comprehensive annual financial report, the findings have shown some significant fiscal setbacks. Now, the city is rebounding a bit now, which I'm pleased to see. And but in terms of some of the strategies for how budgets were balanced over the last period of years, they are not the kinds of things that I would consider to be wise, sustainable decisions. And she's made some tough decisions, albeit that really when you look at the fact that you've got existing negative fund balances, no cushion for operating deficits, the overall credit rating is improving now, but it was very, very poor up until this time. So, I mean, she is claiming to be the elected executive, and yet when you look at the strategies that were taken to balance the budget, they are not good, sound fiscal strategies and controls that were in place. I did serve in the Davis administration as the state budget director, and my role there was really to essentially prepare the options for how we close the budget shortfall. And as you know, any budget process is subject to politics, and we had the governor and the legislature negotiating the budget every year during the downturn. And frankly, the drop in revenues occurred because of a really lackluster stock market performance. So we have huge swings in terms of our revenues being much less than what we had anticipated. And we essentially did try to build the reserve during that time, but also a lot of frustration with respect to cuts and lack of tax relief. And so the decisions become political. But my role at that time was to be independent, to come in with a list of options for how we could really balance the budget and to address the shortfall. And so I do think the blame is not properly placed. And as I look at it, this is all about having the deep fiscal knowledge to be able to propose solutions that will provide for sound fiscal stability.
With those years in mind, as the way the California economy has these boom and bust cycles, how concerned are you right now about the volatility in the way that California's revenues are so much tied to those massive gains in the stock market and this the potential for the future moving ahead from there?
Sure. Well, very concerned. And because, as I said, the budget process is subject to a lot of politics and a lot of give and take, it's very important that we don't find ourselves in another situation where we're building a massive budget deficit because we're spending essentially one-time revenue. Voters will have an opportunity to look at Proposition 2 on the ballot this coming November as well, which does establish a rainy day fund to specifically address putting away some of that one-time revenue, some of that stock market-related income, so that we can build a rainy day fund for when we do have downturns in the future. And as a controller, I welcome that tool. While it may hamper some legislative flexibility, it certainly is a wise tool for sound fiscal planning.
We've been talking with Betty Yee, candidate for state controller. She's currently on the State Board of Equalization. Betty, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure.